Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2017 Home Education Conference, held in Logan, Utah.
All right, well, thank you for being here today. I recognize faces from my class yesterday. And I feel really passionate about this subject of meditation, that this is a skill that we all need to have. And so as I go through this talk today, I hope that you're just open to learning what it is that you need to learn. And maybe I won't say the exact thing that you need to hear, but I hope that you are able to listen from an internal place to get that thing that it is that you need to get. You know, as Mormons, we hear this word meditation often. This is a quote from David O. McKay. He says, "We pay too little attention to the value of meditation, a principle of devotion. In our worship, there are two elements. One is spiritual communion, arising from our own meditation. The other, instruction from others, particularly those who have authority to guide and instruct us." And that's also like people that have written things down in the scriptures, right? "Of the two, the more profitable introspectively is the meditation. Meditation is the language of the soul. It is defined as a form of private devotion, a spiritual exercise consisting in deep, continued reflection on some religious theme. Meditation is a form of prayer. Meditation is one of the most secret, most sacred doors through which we pass into the presence of the Lord." And I've read quotes like this over and over and over again, but never really understood, like, what, okay, I'm supposed to meditate. What is that? What does meditation mean? What is it? And because we come with all of these in our life, we have all of these things bombarding us. C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity says, "The real problem of the Christian life comes where people do not usually look for it. It comes the very moment you wake up each morning. All your wishes and hopes for the day rush at you like wild animals." Or maybe not even just the wishes and hopes, but maybe the demands or the plans rush at you like wild animals. And the first job each morning consists simply in shoving them all back, in listening to that other voice, taking that other point of view, letting that other larger, stronger, quieter life come flowing in, and so on all day, standing back from all your natural fussings and frettings, coming in out of the wind. Now, as I grew up, prayer for me was a stream of words. It was just me basically talking at God, okay? And I realized that I needed to figure out a different way so that I could figure out how to listen to that other voice, to find a stillness that wasn't just a barrage of words and me talking and adding to the wild animals, okay? Because often I felt like that's what my prayers were. So there's a difference between prayer, pondering, and meditation. Prayer is communication with God, most often with words, either in thought or out loud, okay? And this is an essential part of our worship. It's an essential part of our life and our connection with God, is using words. And that's generally what prayer is, especially in our Mormon culture. Pondering is truth-seeking through focused study, reflection, and application. So you might ponder a principle. You might research that through study. You might really ruminate and think on that thing. Reflect on it and figure out how that applies in your everyday life. That's pondering. Okay. But meditation is practicing quiet stillness in our mind, body, and spirit. It's getting out of our own way. Right? It's just letting the part of you that you identify with fall to the side and really feel your real connection with the divine. However it is that you define that. This is the really fun because it's the first time I've taught this to a Mormon audience. And so it's fun that I can just use Mormon words. But it's really beyond and under words. Because really, so much of our experience, you know, our language is just a small part of our brain and really a small part of our experience and capacity. In this beautiful tool of our brain, mind, body, spirit that God has given us. And we need to be able to tap into that. And especially in our Western culture, we are always in our headquarters. We're always here in the thinking mind. And we analyze everything. And not everything can be learned through that cognitive, left-brained, thinking, word-based processing. There's so much more to who we are and how we learn and experience and connect. So there's two kinds. This is a really generalized categorization but for our purposes, there's two kinds of meditation. There's concentration. So this is focusing on one thing for an extended period of time to help train the mind to avoid wandering and to become steady and peaceful. Okay. And tools for focus can be the breath, just paying attention to your body and your breath coming in and out. It can be simple, meaningful words, which is a mantra. That Sanskrit word mantra means mind tool. You can listen and just focus on the sounds you listen around you. You could just pay attention to the process of walking. That could be a concentrating meditation. And there's mindfulness meditation, which emphasizes awareness of the present moment. Okay, so our minds, this mindfulness word, I have not figured out a better one. This is the one that's just kind of used all the time, but it's really more awareness, okay? Because our minds typically are either rehashing the past or projecting to the future, worrying about the future, planning for the future. We are rarely, rarely just here in the present moment, especially when we're focused on what's going on in our thoughts, in our minds. And it's focus on the present moment with non-judgmental acceptance of everything that arises. Okay, non-judgmental. So my toe itches. My toe itches. I'm not going to attach this is good or bad to that. Okay, or it's hot in here. Whatever it is that you're experiencing. And it can be it's also what's happening internally. And enables us to see things with clarity and notice thoughts and feelings without attachment. It is an open-hearted state that we can carry into all of our daily activities. So the reason that we meditate is so that when we go out into our daily life, we actually can focus our minds. We actually can be aware of what's happening externally and internally with us instead of just being jumbled up in the past or the future. So let's talk about stress, happiness, and your nervous system. This is just really blanket, but you have a sympathetic nervous system. This is your flight or fight response or freeze, right? That's what little rabbits would do if they get stuck in this sympathetic nervous system, they'll just freeze. And We all do this, okay? And it turns on our cortisol, our adrenaline, and it helps us fight back in an emergency, okay? It helps us to deal with emergencies. And it's really essential, right? Right now, I am standing in front of a group of people. I'm experiencing this sympathetic nervous system. Adrenaline, okay? And these things are helpful. But what happens is we often get stuck here. We often get stuck here, okay? Because our nervous system doesn't know how to tell the difference between a perceived threat and a real threat. So, you know, for me, it could be the toddler takes off her shoes right as we're getting in the car and has lost them somewhere, and we're in a hurry to get somewhere. In my body, I'm experiencing that the same way as I would experience being chased by a bear in a life-threatening situation, okay? It's that same heightened arousal, like, this is an emergency, but it's not an emergency, okay? It's not an emergency, but we often get stuck. That's where our stress response is, and we get stuck there in that this is an emergency state. But we also have our parasympathetic nervous system, which is our rest and digest, tend and befriend, relaxation response, okay? And so part of the tool, the purpose of the tool of meditation is to help us to consciously tap in to our parasympathetic nervous system so that when I find some resistance from a teenager, I don't go into, this is an emergency! I have to fight for my life! Right? I can tend and befriend, okay? And connect. And I can start to choose that. I can start to choose that. So I think this is a helpful analogy here, is if you take your hand and imagine this is the model of your brain, okay? So here's your limbic system, and this is and your brainstem. This is really kind of the more primitive parts of our brain that can be called the reptilian brain. But this is where a lot of our flight, our stress response is, okay? And then over that is our frontal cortex, okay? And this is where our creativity, our compassion, our cognition, our ability to think reasonably is. But often what happens is we get into a stressful situation and this part takes over. We flip our lid, okay? And we just get stuck here and we don't have any of our creativity, our curiosity, our connective abilities, our cognition. It just flips, okay? And that can be what happens when we get into our fight or flight response, is that we just flip our lid. We want to be able to hold on to that, okay, and use the highest parts of ourselves. So there's a researcher at the Harvard Business School called, his name is Sean Acker, but he researches happiness and is asked all the time, why do you waste your time studying happiness at Harvard? What does a Harvard student possibly have to be unhappy about, right? Because on all the external measurements, they obviously are smart. They're at the best school in the world, okay? They have everything going for them. And this is what he says. Embedded within that question is the key to understanding the science of happiness. Because what that question assumes is that our external world is predictive of our happiness levels. When in reality, if I know everything about your external world, I can only predict 10% of your long-term happiness. 90% of your long-term happiness is predicted not by the external world, but by the way your brain processes the world. And if we change it, if we change our formula for happiness and success, we can change the way that we can affect reality. We have found that it is only 25% of job success. Job success is predicted by IQ, only 25% of that. 75% of job successes are predicted by your optimism levels, your social support, and your ability to see stress as a challenge instead as a threat. So meditation is experiential. And, you know, I could spend hours going over all the research and why it's important, why you should do it. We could really analyze this with our minds, okay? But it is something that you have to experience. So as we go through the rest of this class today, I'm going to ask you to spend some time meditating so that you actually feel it, okay? Because you won't ever get it if all you do is think about it. And like Joseph Campbell describes our consciousness or awareness as a big circle. And then in that circle somewhere there's a line. And everything above the line is what we're aware of. Everything below the line is what we just don't even realize is going on. Okay? But it's all encompassing. It's all a part of who we are. And our goal is just to keep moving that line lower and lower so that what we're aware of increases. So we're going to use the yogic formula of, they call it the koshas, but they talk about how we have 5 bodies, right? We know we have a physical body and a spirit body, but we have 5. And I like the analogy of these nesting dolls that they kind of get deeper and deeper inside of each other. So the first is our physical body. But this is the anamaya kosha. It means the food body. This is what you're made out of, okay? And it is actually, you cannot get any deeper unless you work with that place first, okay? The next is the breath body, the pranamaya kosha. This is your life force energy, okay? So this is what's coming in on your breath. Now, your breath is a bridge between the things that you can control and the things that you can't. Okay, and we'll just go quickly through these. The next one is your conditioned habitual responses. So this is part of your brain, part of your mind. It's the ego. These are the things that are just habitual things that you've built up from the time you were a little tiny baby that often you don't even choose to do. Okay, and then the next is the wisdom, intellect, and choice body. This is your wisdom body, and this is your agency, your ability to choose. And the deepest is your heart or your bliss body. This is your spirit. This is who you really, really are. Okay. And if these dolls were all nested together, and I handed someone my little Matryoshka doll and said, "Okay, I want you to get to the bliss body," what would you have to do first? You'd have to open all the others. You'd have to open all the others. Okay. So let's start with our physical body. I want everyone, I know you've got stuff on your lap. Okay, I'll let you keep your stuff on your lap. And we're actually sitting on chairs. Anytime I've ever taught meditation, we're just sitting on the floor and I'm sitting with you. But I want you to find a place where your feet can be flat on the floor, okay? So move stuff out of your way. Don't cross your legs. Shove your bag underneath your chair. And then you might need to scoot a little bit forward of the back of your chair, because that is just not supporting your spine in like a human way at all. We need our spines to be tall. So close your eyes. Close your eyes. And just start to pay attention to your body. Don't do anything to change anything about it once you're sitting straight with your feet flat on the floor. And I just want you to feel your body. Notice how your feet feel on the floor. And you might even name it. You could name it. Feel the texture of your shoes or the carpet underneath them. Feel the whole length and weight of your legs. And feel your seat really connected to your chair. And then from that foundation of your seat, feel your spine all the way up from the base to the crown of your head. Let yourself feel your belly, everything that's in there and going on there. And you don't need to use words for this. You just let yourself feel and notice that. Feel your chest and your heart space. And feel your face, the muscles in your jaw. You might notice where you're tight in your neck or shoulders. Just kind of hold on to this awareness of your body, and you can go ahead and open your eyes. So we learn from the Psalms. God says, "Be still and know that I am God." Sometimes the only way to hear and feel that connection with God is to still your body, okay? And to feel it, to really be a part of it. How often do we pay attention to how our toes feel, okay? How often do you pay attention to the tension in your jaw? Okay. But all of these things, like your body is really a record of what's going on in your mind and your nervous system. Okay, and it shows. So you need to be aware of your body. And it's hard when you're in the throes of your everyday life. So when you meditate, you need to find a way to be still and to situate your body in a way that is really conducive to the flow of energy in your body, and to line them up so that your spine can be tall, okay, so you have room to breathe. Most of us are doing this all day long. So bad for your body. Right, you're compressing all of your internal organs. You're hardening your heart, okay? So we need to have an open heart and a tall spine and a really solid foundation. So when I meditate, I sit on a pillow so that my pelvis, and I sit on the floor so that my pelvis is a little bit higher than my knees, okay? So that my spine can be tall. And that way it's just more comfortable. Sitting in a chair with your feet flat on the floor is perfectly fine. But you need to find a place where you can be comfortable and sit tall. Okay? And if you need to have a really, like, sit against the wall to help your spine be tall till you get the core strength to hold yourself up, that's good. But the back of a chair is usually not, because you're leaning and tucking your pelvis and compressing your organs in different ways. Because every single thing we experience is registered as a physical sensation, okay? Anything anyone says to you is, like, goes through your ears, right? That's a physical sensation that your brain is recognizing as a sound. But then every emotion that you have is also registered in your body as a physical sensation. Okay, every stimulus that happens is registered in your body as a physical sensation. And so we need to tune into those kinds of things. So that adrenaline, the butterflies in your stomach, like, that is a physical sensation, like a real physical sensation I'm feeling in my physical body right now because I'm standing in front of a group of people. Okay. But anything that happens to you is registered as a physical sensation. So this mindfulness acronym is really useful, and I'm going to teach it here at our physical body, but it applies to all aspects of our lives, all the layers. But I just want you to close your eyes again. Well, actually, let me go through it first, and then we'll do it. So the R in RAIN is to recognize. So you recognize in your physical body the sensation that you have. What's going on? Okay. I feel a knot in my stomach. I feel tension in my chest. I feel tightness in my jaw. I feel an itch, you know, on the back of my leg. Whatever that is, you recognize it. Like this, just it is what it is. Okay. And then the A is to allow. And often this is really hard for us to do. Just to allow it to be there. Okay. So in a seated meditation practice, if you get an itch, it can be a good experience and a good practice to allow it and not try to do anything to change it. Okay. Just to allow it to be. And then you investigate. You can be curious. You can ask yourself questions. I feel this clenching in my gut. Why? What is it about what he said to me that created that reaction in me? What could I do to make this more comfortable? Do I need to breathe deeper? Do I need to let this go? Investigate. You can ask questions, be curious about it, but still allowing it to be there. You keep that allowance. And then you nurture that place with kindness. Everything that we do needs to come back to love. Okay. And so I'm sitting here, I've got a pain in my hip. I don't judge that, okay? I don't say, oh, it's because I'm so lazy and I haven't been exercising enough and it's all my fault and that's why I've got this pain in my hip, right? We can go into a story about all sorts of things, but that's not what investigating is, okay? It's not judging, but we feel it and then we just hold it in a state of tenderness, in a state of compassion and love. And so we can feel that with our own bodies, okay? Because our bodies are a temple. And we know that these are eternal temples. This is a treasure, okay? And you need to reverence this and nourish and nurture it and not try to berate or change your body. So let's close our eyes again. Find a tall spine. Both feet flat on the floor. Don't cross your legs. Just let yourself be still. And just scan your body for any sensations. Just scan your body for any sensations that you have. And recognize that. And then allow. So often we might feel some tension somewhere, and then we start to label that as being uncomfortable. But what if you let go of that label and you just allowed it to be? And then you further allow by just investigating. You can go into that place a little bit more. And you might be able to feel, oh, maybe if I made my spine a little bit taller, I might be a little bit more comfortable. An investigation is a little bit of thought and doing, but it's not rumination and judgment. And then let go of that investigation, and then bring a sense of just compassion and tenderness to that place, a feeling of gratitude. We often try to fight what it is we're really feeling, even just in our physical bodies. And we push those things away and shove them somewhere else. But every single thing has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so even feelings and emotions that are registered in your physical body and you're feeling those have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Now, if you shove that away and don't allow yourself to feel the beginning, the middle, and the end, you can get stuck in the beginning, okay, and never get to the end of it. You can go ahead and open your eyes if you haven't already. So it's really just allowing yourself to feel, okay? And that is something the Savior did perfectly. He was completely able to feel everything he felt so that he could feel everything everyone else has felt, okay? So these are tools to help us become more like him. So our next layer is the breath. So our breath is the bridge between that which we can control and that which we cannot control, right? You can breathe on purpose, right? You can consciously breathe and think about it. But what if you stop thinking about breathing? What happens? You just keep breathing, okay? Right? You're not going to stop breathing. Your body is not going to stop breathing. And so it's kind of this bridge between the things we control, our autonomic nervous system. My brain left. But, you know, the things we control, the things we do on purpose, and the things that our body just does for us. Our breath is that bridge. And in every tradition of yoga, there's a natural breath mantra. As you inhale, it's one word. As you exhale, it's another. And in my yoga training, the mantra we learned was hum as you inhale and sa as you exhale. And some say like sat nam or so hum. They all mean the same thing. It means I am that. I am that part of me that has always existed. I am pure light, love, truth. I am that. Okay. And so in Mormon language, that means I am a child of God. And every one of us is chanting that as we breathe in and out, whether we're thinking about it or not, whether we know it or not. The very fact that we're breathing, inhale and exhale, means I am a child of God. I am a divine being. I am that. That's what it means to breathe. So let's briefly do a breath meditation. Find your tall seat again, feet flat on the floor. And just notice your breath. Don't even do anything to change it first, just notice it. Where does it go in your body? How deep is it? And see if you can start to invite that breath all the way down into your belly. Use the whole capacity of your lungs as you inhale and exhale. And then start to attach to your inhale, hum, just in your mind, and saw as you exhale. you can gently open your eyes. How does that feel? Does anyone have? Feels still? Very still. Any other comments? How does that feel?
I have an easier time focusing when I do that mantra.
You have an easier time focusing when you do the mantra. So that's what mantra means, is mind tool, right? It's to help us focus our minds. When we attach it to our breath and that truth of who we are, it's really, really powerful. So simple, right? It's not rocket science. And no one needed to do all the research to tell us, like, how does that feel in your body to be still and breathe, right? It's pretty powerful and really amazing. Our conditioned habitual responses, this can be the natural man, is like our scriptural word for this. It's often termed the ego, okay? But King Benjamin taught that the natural man is an enemy to God and has been from the fall of Adam and will be forever and ever unless he yields to the enticings of the Holy Spirit and putteth off the natural man and becometh a saint through the atonement of Christ the Lord and becometh as a child, submissive, meek, humble, patient, full of love, willing to submit to all things which the Lord seeth fit to inflict upon him, even as a child doth submit to his father. So there's a book I love. It's called The God Seed by Catherine Thomas. She's a religion teacher at BYU. But I love to have a bridge between all of the Eastern philosophy and the connection, really, to what we believe in our doctrine. But she says this in this book. The term ego refers to one's sense of self, coming from the Latin I. It has been treated extensively in the spiritual, philosophical, and psychological literature of the world and has been defined in several different ways, likely because its nature is not fully understood. But it is generally used pejoratively to refer to the selfish and egotistical aspects of man. Even though it seems to be the I, okay, it subtly camouflages the true self. For our purposes here, the term ego will refer to the thought world of one's false self. Now, we build this up. This is like the veil of this life that happens. You know, when we're babies, we are submissive, meek, full of love, right? And we go through experiences in life and we start building a sense of identity, we attach to things, we create coping mechanisms, and it's just part of the natural man. It happens, it's part of earth life, and it's designed that way. It's just kind of how we're designed to be. And from that, like until we're about 8 years old, these things just, I mean, they keep building after that, okay? But we start being more conscious and able to choose things after then. But really, like, we don't really have any choice when we're little children. But this ego gets built on us. The Lord defines two minds within man, the natural and the spiritual. We will here relate to the ego mind of the false self to the natural man. The natural mind is described as a part of man that exists in opposition to God and sets itself up in opposition to one's true self, enthroning itself as God. And our ego just wants to preserve itself. It wants attention. It wants praise. It wants comfort. Okay. And it's a wanting self. And I talked a lot about this yesterday in my unselfish self-care class, the difference between being selfish and self-aware, right? The ego is a very grasping, closed, everything's all about me, everything's acting on me, okay? And the spiritual is open and loving. That's your true nature, that submissive, meek, humble, pure love part of you. In scriptural language, the ego mind is the mind of vanity and unbelief of the darkened mind. It is a state of being spiritually asleep. And it's part of earth life, okay? And it's just a part. And we have all sorts of things that trigger us, and we act without even thinking about it first. Okay, because we live in this paradox, right? We know that we are free to choose. Who would say that they're not? Okay. And then how many of us just today have done something that we didn't want to do? We often do things that we react habitually a lot. Okay? Because it's the way our mom did it. Or it's just a learned response we have. And the natural man is just part of what we're made of. We have a brain, okay, that just thinks. It's what it does. We have a stomach that digests our food. We have a heart that beats, okay? And we have a brain that thinks. And it's really important to understand that not every thought that you have is necessarily true or coming from the Holy Ghost, right? It's your brain is a tool. And we all have thoughts that incessantly go on in our minds. And we get into thought habits that happen over and over and over again. Now, if any of us just could have a loudspeaker, you know, out of our ear that was saying the things that were happening in our brains, we would all sound like crazy people. Every one of us has this experience of racing thoughts, unrelenting self-criticism, okay? It's part of the natural man. And so not every one of those things that is going on in your head is true, okay? We are not our thoughts, and they don't define you. Your thoughts don't define you. So neurons that fire together wire together, and so we can get into ruts and think the same things over and over and over again. And James Allen, he is a contemporary of Emerson, Thoreau, you know, and the early church. He wrote a book called As a Man Thinketh. I don't know if any of you have read that, but he also has one called Mastery of Destiny, and he has a whole part about meditation. But he says, man is a thought being, and his life and character are determined by the thoughts in which he habitually dwells. By practice, association, and habit, thoughts tend to repeat themselves with greater and greater ease and frequency, and so fix the character in a given direction by producing that automatic action, which is called habit. By daily dwelling upon pure thoughts, the man of meditation forms the habit of pure and enlightened thinking, which leads to pure and enlightened actions, as well as performed duties. By the ceaseless repetition of pure thoughts, he at last becomes one with those thoughts and is a purified being, manifesting his attainment in pure actions in a serene and wise life. And so we get to our ability to choose, which is really linked to our ego, but this is really the deeper parts of our mind. So our mind can be just like a crazy puppy, okay, going all over the place, sniffing this, and then sniffing this, and sniffing this, okay? And the tool of meditation, and especially mantra meditation or something that we're concentrating on, is to tame our crazy puppy and kind of put a leash on it and maybe teach it to heal and walk alongside of us. And it takes practice, okay? You don't, like a puppy doesn't just get trained because you say, come here, puppy, right? It doesn't happen that way, does it? No, it doesn't. It takes practice and consistent effort. And it's really easy for our minds just to wander and wander. Doctrine and Covenants 6:36, the Christ says, look unto me in every thought. Doubt not, fear not. It's another quote from James Allen. He says, it's easy to mistake reverie for meditation. This is a fatal error which must be avoided by one striving to meditate. The two must not be confounded. Reverie is loose dreaming into which a man falls. So this is daydreaming. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm a good meditator, or I can meditate really easily because I'm really good at dreaming things and just sitting still. But really, it's zoning out, right? And that's not what we're looking for. We're not trying to just zone out. Meditation is a strong, purposeful thinking into which a man rises. Reverie is easy and pleasurable. Meditation is at first difficult and irksome. Reverie thrives in indolence and luxury. Meditation arises from strenuousness and discipline. Reverie is first alluring, then sensuous, and then sensual. Meditation is first forbidding, then profitable, and then peaceful. Reverie is dangerous. It undermines self-control. Meditation is protective. It establishes self-control. And that simple breath mantra, the Hum Sa mantra, or it could just be, I am a child of God. Be still as you inhale and exhale. It's work. And you wander off, and then you just bring it back. You just come back, and you just return. And it's going to happen. You wander off, and then you come back again and again. The heart. So there's a traditional meditation practice called metta meditation, or loving kindness. And this is really the lens that we see things as they really are through. When we can see things through a state of charity, through love, that's when we see things as they really are. Basic egocentrism is opposed to God and is in effect a resistance to love, the source and meaning of our being, our true self, the image of God who is love. So the loving kindness meditation follows the pattern of Enos. Enos was in the woods. He was thinking of his father, okay? And someone really easy to love, and it really opened his heart to the Savior, okay? The next thing he did was to feel concern for himself and love for himself. Third is to feel that open-hearted love for your family and immediate circle. And then keep going. And then expand that out to strangers. Maybe the woman you see who walks your neighborhood every day that you don't really know. Okay, and then expand that to enemies. I want to end with this. This metta meditation just briefly. So find again your seat. And I want you to experience this, okay? Because we can write it down, but you're not really going to get it unless we experience it. So let your spine be tall, feet flat on the floor, close your eyes. Feel your body, let it be still. Notice your breath. And let it be really easy and smooth. Let your breath come in and out of your nose. And then bring to mind someone who is really easy for you to love, that doesn't have a whole lot of baggage attached to that relationship. And I want you to really feel completely in your heart space that feeling you have for that person. It could be a child. It could be a teacher or a mentor, a parent. It could be Jesus Christ. It could be a pet. But really breathe into that space, expand into that feeling of love. And then start to wish for that person. Just look that person in the eyes and wish them well. May you be happy. May you feel peace. May you feel love and safety and security. then bring your right hand to your heart, and then just put your left hand on top of that right hand, just on your heart. Keep that tender feeling of love that you have, and start to really give that to yourself. And in your mind, you can say, may I be at peace. And may I be happy and free. May I see myself with clarity, tenderness, and compassion. And you might have other words that feel more intuitive to say, but really give that sense of love and tenderness to yourself. And if it feels good to have your hands there, just leave them there, or you can bring them back to your lap. Start to bring to your mind your family and immediate circle. And really send that sense of love to them. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be free and feel safe and secure. And then bring to mind someone that you see regularly, but you don't even know. Maybe it's the clerk at the grocery store, or the lady who goes on a walk every day around your neighborhood, someone you pass frequently but don't know. Bring them to mind and wish them well. May you be at peace. May you be free from suffering. May you feel love. May you feel happy and free. And then expand that to people that may be your enemies. Really encompass them in those feelings of tenderness and love and compassion that you're full of. May you be at peace. May you be free from suffering. And then let that energy in your heart space expand to encompass all beings, this whole earth. And again, wish them well in your mind. You can do it in your own words. Or it might be beyond words, it may be the intensity of your feeling. And just let yourself feel a sense of gratitude. You could even close just with a quiet prayer of gratitude. And then you can gently open your eyes. And Christ says, if your eye be single to my glory, your whole body shall be filled with light. And there shall be no darkness in you, and that body which is filled with light comprehendeth all things. Therefore, sanctify yourselves that your minds become single to God. I just want to end by saying this is a practice. You're not ever doing it wrong. Okay? If your mind wanders, you just come back. And that is the process of repentance. It's something we do over and over again. And so I really encourage you to add this little element. Just set a timer. You can open with a prayer. And then let yourself be still. In any of those ways that we explored today that really resonated with you, could be just simply paying attention to your breath. It could just be feeling your body. Or it could be that intense, loving kindness that really is your true nature. That's who you are and your capacity. So thank you, everyone, for being here today.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.